was 17 when he left the Philippines. How did he end up coming to California, to Delano?
You know, he just migrated when they started going over and asking workers to come to the United States. He started off working in Alaska, you know, with the salmon, and ended up coming to California and following grapes. He worked in the, my dad worked everywhere. He did everything. Worked in the lettuce, and throughout the years came to Stockton and worked in the asparagus. But the grapes is where the family were involved.
Okay. Now, when your dad, apparently when your dad arrived here, interracial marriage was outlawed, but you're here. How did that work out?
You know, he met my mother in Arizona, and they were both working in fields. You know, my dad didn't speak Spanish, and my mom didn't speak English, and they came over from Mexico to work, and my father saw her and fell in love, and then he learned how to speak Spanish, and they ended up getting married and living in Delano and raising the family.
But what you worked a lot with the elderly Filipino men and over time, and you know your dad was sort of an anomaly. I mean, tell me a little bit about what was going on in those days in terms of the fact that Filipino men came over alone. What was going on?
I mean, there were laws that said the Filipino men didn't get married, and in Delano there were many. You know, most of the Filipinos I knew weren't married. And they lived in labor camps, and they never did marry, even when it, you know, they had the law passed and they could get married to people. They ended up living in the labor camps and then dying in the labor camps. Many of them didn't have bank accounts, as I recall, and just worked in the fields. That's all they did. You know, there was prostitutes that were brought to the ranch. The camps had little stores where they sold food or things that the men would want to buy, and the men never left the camps.
When you saw that, when you realized that when you were a kid, what were you thinking? What went through your mind?
You know, we lived not far from a camp, the Jakovich Ranch, where most of us were born, actually. Of the seven of us, I think five of us were born there at the camp. And there was a camp like maybe a quarter of a mile away. And, I mean, that became home, you know, for me. I would hang out with, because I had an uncle who lived there. And we would just go and hang out and visit all the brothers. You know, they would do the traditional things that they do. You know, they kill a pig every week or a goat. We spent a lot of times out in the labor camps where they would have cockfights. I mean, they were, you know, the things that they liked to do. But and some had families, but very few. It was actually later that they were married. They came married from the Philippines. So many of the old men just got old in the labor camps. And some, very few that I know went home, ever went home. My father never went home.
Now, growing up in Delano, your family settled in Delano. What was Delano like? Then for Mexicanos and Mexican Americans and Filipinos?
You know, back in the early days, because I, like I said, I grew up in a little camp, sort of, with a Mexican family. I guess there were two Mexican families, but most of the people I was exposed to were all the Filipinos. And there was a real division, you know. And maybe because we were not Mexican. You know, we were not full Mexican and we were not full Filipino, so there was always an in-between. And Delano is very divided. So we lived in a camp that was on the east side of town, and the Mexican side of Delano had their own church. And the church kind of, and the railroad tracks, like in all the stories, divided the town. And so we went to the church where actually, the growers, it's a beautiful St. Mary's Church. It's beautiful with all the artwork and statues that the growers brought from, I guess, Yugoslavia back then. And then the Mexican church was, you know, very simple, very, you know. But there was the thing that brought things together with Caesar, I think. I know, because I remember, may have been later, that I attended meetings that that I never saw Mexicans and Filipinos together at one place. You know, and Caesar talked about how we were all brothers and sisters, and how we were fighting. You know, I remember the Filipino crews did more work than the Mexican crews or the Puerto Rican crews, because we're Puerto Rican crews. And the union stopped that, you know. The union brought everybody together. After the Filipinos went on strike and, you know, the Mexicans joined them, there was like there was something that I'd never seen before.
But let's back up a little bit. From your through your eyes as a child, seeing this Delano, which is split. You got the growers who seem to run everything, and then the workers, the farm worker kids. I mean, did you see your future as going off to college like the growers kids, or I mean, how did you see?
Oh, that was
the split there. As a kid, how did you view it?
You know, I think as a kid growing up as a farm worker kid, you know that when you grow up, your future is going to be working in the fields like your parents. You know, my parents were never going to, they had seven children. They were never going to have the money to send me to college or to send any of my other brothers and sisters to college. And we didn't see other people of color going to college back then. But the growers' kids, they always went to college, you know, and you just kind of accept that my future is going to be working in the fields.
And how were the growers' kids with you?
I never met them. They lived. You know, they lived near the farm worker, that ran the farm, the camp that was a Filipino camp, and I don't know that I ever saw them, and if I saw them, you know, they didn't talk to us, you know.
Okay. Now, you talked about the growers as being very powerful, that they were rulers of everything. What would happen if you stood up to them? Before the union? What was your impression that would happen if you revolted or?
The farm workers were very made back in the fields when I was working in the fields, you know. And one story that I will always take with me was the Jamara's son-in-law, big guy. He was like, I don't know. Well, he was big back then. He wore one of these really hard hats, you know, they wear on a African safari. And it was early in the morning, and he was mad because the crew was picking what he thought, well, were the wrong color grapes. And he grabbed a box of grapes, and he threw it over, and then he started jumping on it, you know, and saying how stupid we were that we were not picking the banana-colored grapes. And that, you know, if someone was blind with one arm, they could do a better job than all the workers, you know, in that crew. And people were really scared, you know. And I remember just being really angry, you know, at this guy. Who did he think he was? You know, they owned all the property.
And people... were intimidated. How did they react to
that? Oh yeah, people were afraid. I mean, the people kind of just went back under the grape fields, you know, under the grapevines, and you know, were just hovering, you know, just not saying anything. No one said anything to them, you know, and just went back to work. But you could tell that they were, you know, that they were afraid. What are they going to do? Lose their, you know, they could lose their jobs, and so. They had to do what they were told to do.
So how would you summarize just living in Delano? What was life like for you?
Well, I mean, it's real clear that if you're poor, and you know, I mean, the farm workers were going to be poor. You know, they were, you know, we didn't have medical benefits, you know, and there wasn't unemployment insurance, you know. What are people to do? You know, they would, if there was no work in the winter, they were getting welfare, you know, and working in the fields for as long as they could. You know, even for my father raising seven kids, he would go to work wherever he could work, you know. as soon as he left town, my mom would apply for welfare to feed us, you know, but my dad had to feel like he was contributing and working to support the family, you know. Very proud man.
Now, in 1965, the strike, the Filipinos went out, and then a couple weeks later, the Mexicans went out. What happened? What was happening just before the strike? Were you aware of the fact that there was going to be a strike?
You know, you hear rumblings of a strike. You know, I would hear it from television because people around you are all afraid to talk about it. But you know, you would hear on the news about. You know, Cesar Chavez, and then the local folks would talk about it because there were some local folks that were, like even our neighbors, as I recall, or the husband worked for Pandel and Sons, so they were very strong supporters. And so they were, you know, they were always talking about how Cesar was a rebel rouser and communist and, you know. And so I would think, well, It was like they were just clearly saying to people, you know, don't get involved. You know, don't get involved because they're bad people. Yeah.
And what, and you were here, you were a teenager.
No, I was just a kid, yeah. You know, I was just, you know, I thought farm workers really don't, we were really poor, you know, and I didn't think that it was, you know, my parents needed to have more. I mean, you know, if we got sick, who was? That's why we were all born at the camp. You know, couldn't afford to have us be born in a hospital, and the doctors came out to the ranch. You know, that's not the way it should be.
Okay, so in 1965, in September of 1965, Filipinos go out, and then the Mexicans go out. What happened then? What changed?
We were working with Jamara back then, as I recall. And I remember the day that the strikers came. And they actually took the crew out the back way, you know. But my dad never went to work. We never went back to work at Jamara. You know, my dad went to work someplace else. But it was, you know, even more so in school, you know, people were talking about it. And especially the growers' kids, you know, because they were tough, you know, the sons, you know, they really did look down upon the farm workers and just, you know, expected that we were taking away their livelihood, you know, when all people wanted to do was get paid a decent wage and have medical benefits, you know, and be able to care for the families.
But so once the strike began, then people were angry, or how were people treating you and your families and the other farm workers?
Well, there was there was like a rough up because they wanted to find out who's who, you know, and who are the people that they had to keep an eye on, and who are the people that were going to be breaking the strikes, you know, so that they had their labor force. So I remember, you know, I always recalled, you know, I remember my father getting in a fight with the rancher at the time, and after that we moved, you know, and we were all born there and raised there, and just one day there was a fight and we were gone. So.
But you know, now you were, your family and your relatives and all the other farm workers were on strike. You said your father was a proud man, and how did the strike affect him, and how he viewed himself, and how he viewed?
You know, as I said back then, he was a very proud man and wanted to support his family. I mean, it was important for him to have be able to feed us. You know, that's why he left the area during the strike and went to work someplace else because he couldn't. He wasn't going to be able to, you know, feed us. So that changed. I mean, that changed later. But I recall him saying how that was a good thing. You know, that was a good thing that because he was talking about his Filipino friends that were involved, that were on strike, and that it was something that needed to happen.
Okay.
You know, I recall that he was involved in other smaller strikes, you know, those wildcat strikes with the Filipinos, because they were pretty strong, you know. They all decided they were going to go on strike. They went. And he was involved in some of the earlier smaller strikes.
Okay. But one of the things that you'd said when we talked earlier is that my dad was a proud man. With the strike, he now felt, we could say, shove it. With the strike, it was the first time it felt I felt we could challenge him and be disobedient. What was going on there with you and with your family that you?
You know that the strike did just make me personally as a young kid feel like, you know, this is like something that I'd not seen ever before. You know, where people are standing up and saying, we have a right to medical benefits. We have a right to clean water. We have a right to bathrooms, all the things that we didn't have. And that we have a right to those things, and the growers shouldn't think that we're going to not fight for those things.
But why do you think you didn't have them before? It sounds like a decent thing to do. Why wouldn't the growers provide those for you?
Why should they? I mean, it cuts into their cost, you know? I mean, it costs money to have, you would think it doesn't cost that much money to have clean water for workers, you know, benefits, but still, they don't cost that much. It was all, you know, growers can't make money if they have to take care of the workers like all the other people in the United States, you know, that have laws that protect them, so that they can't be treated badly. You know, if they get fired, they have some place that they can go, a union that they can go to that supports them. You know, the growers didn't want that kind of power to the farm workers. Are you kidding?
Why?
Because they would lose their power. I mean, they were kind of like the kings of the valley, you know. They drive around in their big cars. They have, you know, their Slavonic Hall, where they have parties and they have their big homes out in the farms, you know, and their kids going to college. They don't want any of that threatened by some farm workers that think that they ought to have medical benefits and unemployment benefits. You know, we're just kind of slaves back then.
Now, one of the things that's always perplexing for farm workers and also for the growers is that, I mean, a lot of farm workers were Catholics and the growers were Catholics also. And they, you know, at some point, at different points, they wanted to have the church be on their side. How did you see, I mean, you went to church with the same people who were not giving decent wages or treating you humanely. I mean, how did that work? Did the church get involved?
You know, the church, like I said, Delano had two, the Guadalupe Church and St. Mary's Church. And I grew up, like I said, in the East Side, so I went to the church, the same one that the growers go to. The church, the priests would talk to the growers about, you know, the Beatitudes, that you need to be taking care of your brothers and sisters and those who have less than you have. And you know, I was just a little kid sitting there, but I recall listening to those and saying, you know, yeah, you know, they're right. And that's something that I would like to do, is how do I help farm workers, you know? But they weren't even talking to me. You know, they were talking to these big guys beside me that were the growers that were there in their suits and, and probably were not very happy, you know, where if you go to Guadalupe, you know, everybody was saying, yeah, you know, it's time that the growers did something for the farm workers.
Now, apparently there was lots of polarization, and even within families, there were some folks who were foremen and husband, wives, that kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit about what in your family, was there a split in the family as to who was, some people were striking, some people were still working?
You know, I mean, that was probably later on. Not early on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then
yeah.
Probably stay away from that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you grew up with the around the Chavez kids. You knew the Chavez kids. I mean, what was when you guys were kids? What was that? What was life like for you? For you kids?
They were just, you know, I mean, they were like kids. They were like, you know, they were just like everybody else. You know, I remember, you know, being at Caesar's house and Caesar coming in and out and like a group of people coming in and out. Everybody got quiet or we kind of moved to another room, you know, because they were organizing something or something big was going on, you know. And people, we just kind of, you know, did our own thing, moved to the other side of the, to the room, you know. And I recall Caesar always was real friendly, you know. I remember he always remembered me, I think, from the time I was a kid, throughout the years, yeah. But it was a real busy time.
Okay. And during Caesar's fast, I know you were around at that time. What? Did you kids know what was going on? I mean, I'm trying to get a perspective from, you know, when you're a kid, we don't see the same things, as you do as an adult. But what were you guys aware of what was going on during that time, the fact there were lots of people hanging out?
Yeah, you know, and I recalled, you know, Robert Kennedy and everybody coming to town and just the traffic and just the people. Delano was like alive, you know, became, and all the farm workers and, it was, I'm not sure.
I'm trying to get a sense of what was going on and how you as kids, you know, viewed what was going on during that time. Because there was a lot, like you said, there was lots of activity going on there in Delano, and you had Senate hearings and Bobby Kennedy's coming and all that. But as kids, were you aware really of the magnitude of what was going on?
No, a lot of that stuff I saw in on the news on television, you know, and didn't really know the history that was going on out of 40 acres, other than reading it in the news. You know, as kids, you're kind of protected from the crowds and from people, but you know, I knew that something was going on. I know that Caesar was organizing farm workers, but it wasn't something that we all talked about, you know. It was something that we just all knew was going on.
Okay. Now, moving on a little bit more, as the strike wore on,
uh-huh.
Your dad was off having to work in other jobs. Were you involved in any of your siblings involved in the pickets, or were you out there in the picket line? And what, if you were, what was it like?
Not in the early strike, you know, but in the later strike, you know, it was the Filipinos were still on strike, you know, and we hung out with the Filipinos, and they were very, you know, I mean, they were very proud and very happy and very strong. And what probably different than what it was before, you know, they were kind of very submissive. Everyone was very submissive back in the old days. But as the strike went on, people saw and as the years went on, people saw that the union was making headway. People, you know, changed. People felt, you know, you could see that they weren't afraid anymore, you know, to stand up and say what they needed and wanted and expected.
And what was that? What made him change?
You know, that they saw that Caesar was actually, that the farm workers, you know, and that Caesar leading them were making headway. You know, the growers signed the early contracts and that the people were together, all the people that they could depend on everyone.
Okay. If you could tell me a little bit more about the Filipino men, because you ended up working a lot with the elderly men. What was life like for these men who came over and lived alone?
It was very lonely. I mean, I remember being at the camp and they would just go to work. They would come home. They would eat. They would watch television. You know, on the weekends, prostitutes would come in. The growers would arrange for prostitutes to come in that was their, you know, in interaction with people. You know, and some never did learn how to speak English, you know. And that's all they did was work and live in the camps. Have a, you know, have a garden, grow some chickens. They had a very lonely life. And like I said, many of them who never got married, it was real sad to see them kind of die away and no namesake. You know, I mean, I feel happy for my father that, but there weren't very other many, like I said, other people that were married, other Filipinos that were married back in those days.
And how is it that your father was able to get married?
He was really lucky, you know. He just married my mom. I mean, he saw her, fell in love, and wanted to be married to her and married her. And interesting that a lot of other people didn't do that. None of my uncles and none of the other Filipinos I was around. Interesting question.
Now, because we're trying to figure out, you know, when things change when the law changed. We're actually talking about that. When that law changed, and I don't know what the date is.
Right. No.
Remember, I mean, did that change things for the
Filipinos? No, you know, those Filipinos guys, they were, you know, this group that came along with my father, I mean, they were all old Ilocanos. You know, they had never had an opportunity to meet other women. You know, and even when the law passed, they were used to being alone and isolated, and did, you know, like I said, some never learned how to speak English, so they ended up just staying at the camps, and that was, you know, a way to control them too, you know, so that they wouldn't leave the ranch, and like I say, some died at the ranch they went to work for.
So how did the strike and the empowerment of the strike, how did that change you?
It changed, you know, I think if it hadn't been involved, if I hadn't been involved with the farm workers, I'd still be in Delano right now, you know, and working in the fields. I can't even imagine what that would be like. And working for the farm workers, it, you know, Caesar opened the doors to another world that farm workers don't ever get that option, you know? So I thought I could do anything that I wanted to do, you know? And I believed that, and so it did change my life.
But what was it that made you believe that?
Because we were successful. I mean, you know, the going to work with the farm workers and having people, you know, recognize the farm workers and the world reached out to the farm workers and brought the world, you know, made the world a small place, you know, meeting people from other parts of the country and other parts of the world, that they all supported the farm workers, you know, people who brought food to the tables.
And that made you feel proud?
Sure. Sure. There isn't anything that, you know, but back working with the farm workers, you know, and dealing with the growers, you know, they would arrest us, and I said, you know, you could kill me, I'll be back tomorrow. I mean, the only way you could stop us was to kill us, because we'll be back, you know. We had, back then, when the law was passed, we had a law, you know, and we were going to fight.
So okay, move along.
How are we doing?
We're doing great.
Are we doing okay?
Yeah, you're very good, very good. Totally. We've actually got through most of the stuff. What do you think we should be, you know, because the